Picture this. You are somewhere over Venezuela. The early 1930s, you're in a small working airplane flying over terrain that does not show up on any reliable chart, because nobody reliable has ever been down there long enough to chart it. Below you, the Gran Sabana, a vast plateau in the southeast of the country, higher than the surrounding jungle, covered in grassland and small rivers and scattered forest, and rising out of it like monuments to a time before memory, the Tepuys, tabletop mountains, flat on top, sheer walled on all sides, some of them rising straight up for 3,000 or 4,000 feet off the jungle floor, and then you come around a bend in the clouds, and you see it, a waterfall. But that word does not do it justice. A river launching itself off the rim of the tallest tepuy in the region and falling, 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 for so long that by the time it hits anything solid at the bottom, much of it has already turned to mist. The total drop from rim to valley floor is nearly 3,200 feet. The free-falling portion alone is over 2,600 feet. For comparison, Niagara Falls drops about 167 feet. You could stack Niagara 19 times inside what you're looking at right now and still have room at the top. You have just seen something the Western world does not know exists. You are Jimmy Angel. And this moment is about to define the rest of your life. I'm Tail Dragger on radio. Hangar, this is the hangar. Pull up a chair, because this one is a story worth telling, right? Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. James Crawford Angel was born in 1899 in Greene County, Missouri. He came up in the era when aviation was new enough that a kid with enough nerve and enough stubborn determination could teach himself to fly and actually get somewhere with it. By the time the First World War ended, he was in the air. By the 1920s, he was barnstorming across the American West, doing the county fair circuit, the air shows, the passenger hops for a dollar. But sometime in the middle of that decade, he ended up in Latin America. And that is where the real flying was. South America in the 20s and 30s was a continent being opened up from above. The jungle interior was effectively impenetrable by road. Rivers were the only highways, and even those were not reliable past a certain point. If you needed to move people or cargo into the deep interior, you flew. Oil companies, mining operations, rubber plantations, the occasional government survey party, they all needed pilots who could operate under conditions that would give most sensible aviators genuine pause. Angel was exactly the kind of pilot who did not think of those conditions as obstacles. Now, the story he told for the rest of his life goes like this. In 1927, a mining engineer named J.R. McCracken hired Angel to fly him into the Venezuelan interior. McCracken had found something, a river up on the high ground somewhere near the Tepuy country that ran gold, not just trace of significant gold ore that McCracken described in terms that made Angel's ears perk up. Angel flew him in. He flew him out. McCracken paid him in gold dust, according to Angel's account, and made him swear on whatever a barnstorming bush pilot swears on that he would not reveal the location. McCracken died not long after. The exact circumstances are vague, and whatever he knew about that gold-bearing river, whatever coordinates he had worked out, died with him. Angel tried to find that river again. He flew that country again and again over the following years. He never found the gold, but he found other things. Here is the honest historical footnote about Jimmy Angel as a historical figure. He was not the most reliable narrator of his own life. He was a pilot in the tradition of the barnstormers, which means he told a great story, and he did not always let verifiable facts slow down a good one. Some historians are skeptical of the McCracken story. Some think parts of it are legend built up over years of retelling. What is not in dispute is this. By the early 1930s, Angel was making regular flights over the Gran Sabana and the Tepuy country. He was filing reports with geographic societies and government offices and newspaper editors, anyone who would read them. He was describing a waterfall of incomprehensible scale that he had seen from the air, and most people thought he was exaggerating. The Tepuy country was not somewhere you went casually to check somebody's claim. It was weeks of river travel from any population center of consequence. The jungle was dense and the terrain on the ground was punishing. A pilot saying he had seen an enormous waterfall somewhere in that vastness was easy to discount. A Venezuelan geologist named Ernesto Sanchez La Cruz made his way to the base of the falls in the mid-1930s and brought back photographs and measurements. The scientific community started to take notice, but Angel's name was on the falls by then. When the outside world finally accepted that this waterfall existed, it was called Salto Angel, Angel Falls, the name stuck. Which brings us to November of 1937. Angel had been talking for years about landing on top of Ollantaytambo. The Great Tepuy, the one the falls came off of, it covers roughly 270 square miles of surface. Enormous. And from the air, the top of it looks like it might be workable. There are flat areas, open stretches, what look from altitude, like firm ground and reasonable approaches. He was convinced he had found a landing spot. He put together an expedition. His wife Marie was coming. She was not a woman who stayed home while her husband went on adventures. Gustavo Henry, an experienced aviator and one of Angel's regular flying partners in Venezuela, came along as well. And a man named Miguel Delgado, a local farmer and experienced jungle hand, who would serve as guide on the ground. The aircraft was called El Rio Caroni, named after one of the great rivers of that region, a high-wing monoplane, the kind of utilitarian working airplane that bush pilots favored in that era. Fabric covered over a metal frame, radial engine up front, honest and dependable. It had carried Angel through years of flying over terrain that would have grounded aircraft with less experienced hands on the controls. They flew out to Ollantaytambo on November 9, 1937. Angel came around the Tepuy and lined up on the flat area he had been planning on for months. He made his approach, the surface came up, he flared. The wheels touched and went straight down into the bog up to the axles. The surface was not what it looked like from the air. This is the great trap of the Tepuy country, and nobody who had flown over it without landing on it would have known. The rock up there is ancient, billions of years old, and it has been covered over centuries by a layer of vegetation, decomposed organic matter, accumulated rainfall. From a few thousand feet, it reads as solid ground. It is not solid ground. It is a saturated bog of varying and unpredictable depth, the kind of surface that swallows a wheel and does not negotiate about giving it back. Ollantaytambo gets extraordinary rainfall. The Tepuys generate their own weather. The surface up there is perpetually wet. The El Rio Caroni came to a stop in seconds. The nose went down slightly. The gear was buried. The airplane was not going anywhere. Nobody was hurt. The aircraft itself was largely intact. The engine had not been torn off. The wings were fine. Structurally, the airplane had survived a landing. It was never designed for and done it without injuring anyone, but it was not going to fly off that mesa. They spent the rest of that day and into the next trying to dig it out. They dug. They pushed. They cut brush and debris and tried to make a base under the wheels for traction. The bog absorbed everything they put into it. Ollantaytambo is not just wet on the surface. The saturation goes deep. There was no foundation to work with. The airplane would sink a little more every time they tried to move it. On the second day, they made the decision. They were going to walk out, four people, one direction, down and away. 11 days through the kind of terrain that resists easy description. Getting off the top of Ollantaytambo itself means descending cliff faces, not gentle slopes. Near vertical walls of ancient quartzite, some of them several hundred feet at a stretch. They used ropes where they had them. They scrambled where they did not. The constant rainfall that defines the Tepuy country means wet rock, which means every handhold and foothold is a negotiation with gravity. You test before you commit. You move carefully. At the base of the Tepuy, they hit the primary forest. The dense tropical growth that closes over your head and has no paths. Because there are no people in that particular stretch of jungle to make paths, they were moving with machetes, cutting as they went, navigating by the river courses that run off the Tepuys in every direction. The rivers in that country are not calm in November. They were swollen and fast running. Crossing them meant waiting when the depth allowed and working along the banks, looking for a fordable spot when it did not. Everything was wet. Everything was heavy with that weight. The insects were relentless. Marie Angel described the walkout later in terms that she kept restrained and factual, which somehow makes it sound worse than any dramatic account would. She talked about feet, mostly. What 11 days does to your feet in that country. She mentioned the nights camping in the jungle with whatever they had been able to carry off the airplane. The sounds. The darkness out there is total when the cloud cover comes in. They made it. All four of them. They found a local settlement after 11 days and got word back to civilization that Jimmy Angel's party was alive. The El Rio Caroni stayed on top of Ollantaytambo. Now here's where it gets interesting. And I mean that in a way that I want you to sit with for a moment. That airplane did not sit there for a season. It did not sit there for a year or two while a recovery operation was mounted. It sat there for 33 years. 33 years of equatorial rain and wind and mist. 33 years of vegetation slowly working its way around and over and through the fabric and the metal. A whole world went by. A second world war, the birth of the jet age, the sound barrier broken, the space age human beings walking on the moon, Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry and the Beatles. All of that happened, and Jimmy Angel's airplane sat on top of an ancient mesa in the Venezuelan jungle getting rained on. Angel himself continued flying. He kept pushing for recognition of the falls, kept filing reports, kept talking to anyone who would listen about what was down there. He moved around Latin America, flying contracts where he could find them. By the 1940s, he was getting older and the barnstorming era had long passed, but he flew. He died on November 8, 1956. He had been in a crash landing at Tocumen Airport in Panama. The impact led to injuries that became a brain hemorrhage. He was 57 years old. He never saw his airplane come off that mountain. His ashes, at his request, were scattered over Angel Falls. You have to respect a man who knows where he belongs. In 1970, the Venezuelan Air Force decided it was time to bring the El Rio Caroni home. They sent military helicopters, Sikorsky aircraft, rigged for the lift, and they raised that airplane off Ollantaytambo on a sling after 33 years on that surface and brought it down to the world. The aircraft was restored. It is on display today at the Aeronautical Museum in Maracay, Venezuela. By most accounts, given everything it went through, it is in remarkable shape. Angel Falls is now the centerpiece of Canamay National Park, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. There is a thriving small aircraft and bush flying community that operates charter flights into the park. Pilots who have flown that route describe the approach into Canamay as one of the great flying experiences on the planet. Low and slow over the Gran Sabana. The tepuis coming up around you, landing on a grass strip next to a lagoon. The falls visible in the distance, that perpetual column of mist hanging over the gorge. In 2009, the Venezuelan government officially restored the indigenous Pemon name, Carapacapai Vina, which means something close to waterfall of the deepest place. International usage still mostly says Angel Falls. Both names carry weight. One honors the people who have lived alongside those falls for centuries before anyone arrived in an airplane. One honors the barnstorming bush pilot from Missouri who fell out of the sky over it and could not leave it alone. I think about what bush pilots actually did, and I think this story says it plainly. The geography of the 20th century, the actual discovery of what was where, in the places that had no roads and no reliable maps, that work was done largely by pilots, working pilots, men and women who got paid to haul equipment and fuel and passengers into country that had no other access, who read terrain from altitude and made judgment calls about surface conditions and sometimes got those calls wrong. Angel's wheels went into the bog on Ollantaytambo and he did not panic. He worked the problem methodically. He tried every option for getting the airplane out. When that effort failed, he organized four people and led them out through 11 days of jungle and cliff face and swollen river and got everyone home. The airplane stayed behind, but the people came home. And the tallest waterfall on Earth still carries his name. Much of today's history draws from National Geographic's archival coverage, the Smithsonian Institution's records on Venezuelan exploration, and accounts documented by the Venezuelan government's historical aviation records. You can find more at radiohangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger Blue Skies.